mean, if it's Tuesday, you know it's Tuesdays with Stan Dale from standale.com, one of our favorite guests every Tuesday right here on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Before we get to Stan, let me ask you a question, folks. Are you sick of being stressed, overwhelmed, and unmotivated? Who isn't, right? Do you feel like life is running you instead of running your life? Well, you're not alone. Finally, folks, you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with Whole Tones. We talked about this at the conference. That's Whole Tones. Finally, you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with Whole Tones.
Michael Terrell, I believe it was the first of the month. He was on our show Tuesday, a couple of Tuesdays ago, right before Stan, the first 2 hours. And he came on to explain his Whole Tones, how they work, the healing properties of the the King David music that are back to the biblical frequencies used in the Bible, and how they're different from today, and what those frequencies and how they affect the people, both physically, mentally. And not only that, but we expanded into other areas of discussion about how frequencies can affect mood, how they can affect, you know, your emotions, how they can affect so much that we never really think about, and their healing properties.
Right, and at Whole Tones Live, they've got a collection of proven music therapy that can help reduce stress, ease your mind, motivate you. You can get started today, folks, and listen to a free sample of this amazing music that heals and inspires at WholeTonesLive.com. That's WHOLE, WholeTonesLive.com. One of many happy Whole Tones clients said, and I quote, I started playing Whole Tones throughout my workday. Not only was I more creative, motivated, the work I was doing seemed easier and clearer. We found the same to be true here. And I just want everyone to go to the website, download a free sample at WholeTonesLive.com. Support this broadcast. Support the Hagman and Hagman Show. Go to WholeTonesLive.com. That's Whole Tones, as in WHOLE, WholeTonesLive.com. Welcome, Stan.
Good evening, guys. I was just talking to you just before the show about your trip to Dallas and feeling a little bit homesick for my hometown, but I'm glad you got to go there and go to the convention. Good to have you back.
It was fun. Yeah, I was glad to be back, and just so great to have you. I missed you last week. Of course, our shows were on hiatus, if you will, so it's great to have you back. A lot of stuff going on. Where do you want to start?
Well, I guess the current thing is a thing in Brussels, just a bit about, I'm sure the airwaves and the print media are full of it at the moment, but Holly and I have been watching it through the day and reading some of the reports. It's rather gruesome, some of the stuff that is being reported by survivors who were sitting in a room or in the airport there, or whether they were, you know, in the subway system or whatever, but the railway system, they would be sitting there and the bomb goes off and parts of people go flying past them, not people, but they were absolutely ripped apart by the sheer force of the blast. And I was thinking how enormous that would be in the middle of something like that, how, you know, psychologically devastating it would be to have that burned into your memory. A blast that strong would probably break eardrums and, you know, blow out glass and stuff, but I mean, it's just kind of hard to conceive that. And from our distance here, you know, across the pond from all this, it's, oh yeah, it happened over there in Brussels. That's really sad. But a lot of people have not put two and two together and realizing these are kind of like small test runs before they get over here and do it to us. They're going to hit us again, and they're going to hit us in suburbia, you know, in places we don't expect it, maybe with large crowds to get more bang for the buck. But that's what I see out of that Brussels thing. It's on for one and all. It's going to escalate horrifically, I reckon.
It's coming. It's coming to America. Stan, I'm convinced. And the first couple of hours, I had a I don't want to say a rant, but you know, people don't understand. People just don't understand the lateness of the hour. It's coming here. What you see in Brussels is going to happen. It's going to happen. Well, It can happen anywhere. It can happen in Atlanta. It could happen in wherever. Just insert the name of the city here. And, you know, I mean, how many more times do we have to warn people about this? It's coming. It's coming.
A lot. We're going to have to warn people a lot more. Looking at this article from Infowars.com, Hillary Clinton calls closing borders unrealistic, but exempted Muslim Brotherhood from TSA screening. Clinton State Department stopped TSA screening from Al-Qaeda-linked group. So, you know, when we have the people who are sworn to protect us, who are paid by our tax dollars to look out for our best interests, they are the ones not only, you know, offering assistance, weapons, and support to these people, they are bringing them into the country knowingly being affiliated with terrorist groups. That makes the battle that much harder.
Oh, I know. I know. I just do not understand the policies of Sanders or of Clinton. I mean, they are so obviously dedicated to the overthrow of the United States, you know, perhaps an underhanded move to do so, but that's what they're doing. And now it's becoming even more and more obvious that they're trying to do everything they can to make us defenseless and invite in our enemies and, you know, bring us down. I mean, look at what they have done to us, you know, not just Democrats, but mainly them. The country has been losing trade to China, to Europe. They've looted some of our best people here, paying them more money than they can get here and taking them out of the country. They've taken our patents and things, just stolen them and made products and improved the things, admittedly, in some cases. But they've not paid any royalties to people over here. You know, taking our biggest, best companies, you know, Apple in China and car manufacturers in Mexico, you know, they've just been systematically looting us of anything of value, from people to things. And once they've done that, the only thing that they need to do is shut the people down over here, because we're a nuisance. We're useless consumers as far as they're concerned. And, you know, since we use six or seven times the energy per capita compared to the rest of the people of the earth in our, you know, our pleasant lifestyle, which, you know, we have everything, it's an easy thing to sell to the rest of the world, and America's got to come down, got to be put in its place. And they just do not realize that when they do that, they're going to be cutting off all the aid, the foreign aid and assistance we give overseas, all the policing actions that we've done for other countries when we didn't need to, didn't have to. It's like in the Revelation when Babylon falls. I mean, you know, the merchants of the world are going to cry when America falls. You know, people are going to realize that they're going to miss us. You know, we may be doing a lot of things that are incorrect because of our crazy administration at the top, but the people of America are the good souls of the planet still. And, oh, we're being the good souls of America. We're being misled into spending a lot of time in the election process, you know, the caucuses and, you know, the endless debates and analyses on the networks with the various candidates and, you know, the newest TV shows and stuff. Everything they can do to make us not pay attention to us being, as a country, raped, being just destroyed. You know, you said that, Doug and Joe as well, that you're amazed at how many people just aren't paying attention, and they're just being blinded, being distracted like magicians at their home, trying to keep our mind on something unimportant while the real deal happens. ISIS, you know, I look at ISIS as not a country, obviously, but as a group of affiliated people, a community of bad guys, right? And in Daniel 11:23, it talks about the Antichrist of this time. And, you know, he's the Prince of the Covenant and everything. And in 11:23, it says, and after the agreement made with him, you know, over the covenant, he will work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall become very strong with a small people. Now, that's with a small number of people in common association, common thought. Not so much a country, but a people. And I tell you, I think the Antichrist of this age will become very strong when he defeats ISIS. They are people that are a nuisance not only to the United States, to Europe, to other Muslim countries. They are a nuisance worldwide. They are a threat worldwide. So the individual that solves that problem, puts them, you know, contains them, is going to be a hero. And with the help of them, he's going to gain power, at perhaps the United Nations or the New World Government, whatever they're calling it. And I just see these things forming right before our eyes. I still wonder if we're even going to be allowed to have the November elections for president here, whether all the candidates will live to go to the election process, or whether the president will declare a state of emergency over something in the Middle East, or the wounding or assassination of one of the candidates. I mean, something I just feel is going to happen to prevent us being able to have a presidential election this year. Anyway, I natter on. I'm on my...
Stan, so you're thinking that perhaps, okay, just to be clear, I mean, your instincts and guts based, or your instinct based on your research and the assessment of headlines and such, you're questioning whether we're going to have elections this year. Is that what I'm hearing you say? Or
Yeah.
See,
as my dad used to say about instinct, he says, my instincts, but it doesn't tell me anything.
I got that.
That's a little Texas humor there for you.
I believe we're a captured nation, captured from within. And my question, I guess, would be why go right to the obvious, the overt, hey, you know, we've actually captured you, ha ha ha, versus slipping the other person in. But you know, I'm very troubled when I hear people of your stature, and I'm not. I mean, truly, I'm being honest, and I respect your assessments, and I respect you. When I hear people, yourself and others like you, say that I start paying attention, and you know, wow. I mean, don't you think though, Stan, that we'd have? Would that be enough to cause anyone to get off the couch? You know, if elections were stopped, would it be?
It'll start. What'll happen will be extremist groups, whether white, black, Muslim, or whatever, will take action. We've got enough armed groups around here that are extremes, and something will happen, and it will start a cascading effect through the states, and. I think that when that happens, there will be a lot of people who become more cautious of getting outside and going and doing shopping. The economy will suffer greatly, and there will be roving tribes and gangs form. And this will require that martial law be declared to put things in order. And it'll get even worse then. I really believe that we're going to rip ourselves apart in a multi-sided, multifaceted civil war. And once we're a house divided in this precarious time, we're doomed. We're going to fall.
It could be right now, from now until November, I mean, so what you're saying really basically is this is a really precarious time. I mean,
yeah,
as if we didn't know that, but wow, okay.
You know, and so many people still are not paying attention to the news. You know, it leaps at them, and even if they do see the news, the highlights of it on TV or in the local newspaper, if anybody buys them anymore, they will say, oh, yeah, that was yesterday's problem. What's happening tomorrow? And they will go on with their peaceful lives, thinking that, okay, that was yesterday's problem, and it didn't get me, so, you know, life is normal and life is good. And they will ignore this. They won't dwell on it for several days or even a week or two running. You and I, Joe and others like us, we live this stuff. So, you know, it's our job to try to wake people up and say, look, think about this issue for a couple of days, maybe 3 days, instead of just one and then dismiss it. Don't let it fade like the news cycle. You know, and so people say, yeah, okay, so what can you do about it? Since we can't do anything about it, we're going to ignore it. That's not a solution. But that's what we're seeing. That's just what we're seeing.
Well, You know, let me ask, I mean, conversationally here, aside from being immersed in the Word, and I know it, we know how the story ends. How do you deal with this? Because I hear from a lot of people who are alone in apartments and mobile homes, and or just alone, you know, who have family who think that they're nuts, you know. And I looked a lot of people in the eyes this conference, and I could tell the loneliness and the hurt, and I mean it ripped me apart, Stan. I mean. And I had one lady say, you know, I'm here by myself. My husband doesn't believe me. He thinks I'm nuts. He thinks I'm involved in some cult.
Oh, boy.
You know, I mean, how do you deal with that, Stan? I mean...
Well, look, Holly and I deal with it differently because we don't see that many people outside of our immediate neighbors. And they tolerate us. We don't, as long as we don't get on a soap wagon, a soapbox and... pound it down their throats. They know that we're kind of eccentric in that way, but since we don't beat it on the table with them, you know, they let us be part of their social cycle, you know. But if we had to deal with our families, you know, which they all live so far away, it doesn't happen, but I'm sure most of them in our immediate family are pretty aware and are Christian, so we're not totally alone in that respect. My family, I'm pretty sure, are aware. And children and their spouses and stuff like that, okay, that's not too happy. I mean, we know that the spouses are from other families and disciplines. And they may have a bit of loneliness in that respect. I know my son Nathan down in Australia feels that way at times. But for people here who are alone, you know, have no one to talk to and are treated as outcasts by their family and friends, look, understand that before they afflicted you, they afflicted our Messiah, and he dealt with even harsher terms than we're dealing with. You know, he's killed on the cross for it and beaten, and so we have to kind of buckle up and deal with it and say, okay, we might feel like we're alone human-wise, but, you know, spiritually, we're a member of a very elite group of people on the planet who love the Lord and know what's happening and have read the end of the book, and we do have a duty to not sit and feel sorry for ourselves, but to get out there and help those around us to see what's happening and then offer the solution to their fears, which will obviously serve us if they pay attention. Holly and I occasionally feel that that aloneness, and when we do, it's aloneness from the world, and we look at each other and say, hey, you and me, babe, you and me, and the Lord.
Amen to that.
And that's the attitude, you know, couples should have, married couples should have. You know, it's sad, but it's true. So many people are feeling abandoned, feeling alone, isolated because of their beliefs, and many, you know, the people I'm speaking of are on fire for the Lord, but as my dad said earlier, are marginalized to the point of being called in a cult, or, you know, that they're taking it too seriously or going too far with it, and it is just, it's very sad. Stan, we can let's move on to what you have here on your show images page, and folks, go to standeo.com. Scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side underneath the YouTube banner. Next to the microphone is a link to Stan's show images. And I was just playing around here. You had the first two on your page, the Earth's Gravitational Geoid Animated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to start there, Stan, but can you kind of explain what that is? Because that looks kind of funny.
Another week or two has gone by, and I've gotten my fair share of the Earth is flat emails. And one guy sent me a thing, in fact, two, three sent me the same thing, talking about a lifeguard 16, 18 years ago had a job in Ventura, California on the coast, and he was a lifeguard, and he sat up in his lifeguard tower, and he could see about 18 miles away out in the ocean there a little island, and it's an arch island, and he could see that, and according to the formulas for the curvature of the Earth, you calculate the horizon, how far you can see, you shouldn't be able to see 18 miles away, but yet he could see the little arch formation, the arch rock over on that island. And I did the sums, I did the standard equations, I did Google Earth and looked over the horizon from ground level, and, you know, all those things say you shouldn't be able to see it. But what people had forgotten to consider was the distortion of the Earth's surface. It's not perfectly round. It has depressions and raised areas in the whole mantle. And these two images I've got up there, I put one that's a flat projection of the Earth just to kind of stoke those flat earthers and let them see that where the deep purple and blue is, that's a dent in the surface of the Earth, and where there are reds and oranges, that's a pushed up portion of the Earth. And if you look at the flat image, you'll see over at California, there's a depression area there. And if the depression area, you know, the detail of it between Ventura and 18 miles away, if that depression area is between the island and the coast, and since it's an island, it's a raised area, that would explain why you could see across that area, because it's not perfectly round, it's depressed there.
And
anyway.
And that's kind of like here in where we live, I see that. Lake Erie is part of this, the blue, so it dips down. Because on really clear days, if you're at the right altitude, you can, and it's not a high altitude, you can see certain buildings in Canada.
Yeah. So, yeah, they tricked me for a while when my equations, you know, verified what they said. You couldn't see that. But once I got into the guts of this at NASA and the explanation of it, which I put in. If you click that picture, that flat Earth picture, and look at it, it gives you some information there about how they determine this, you know, and what the deviation is, you know, from norm. And if you click on that next cell over, the one that says Earth's gravitational geoid animated, if you click on the picture, it's a frozen picture to bring it up to show you the exaggerated lumpiness of the planet, you know, the shape of it. And they determine that by a number of satellites as they go around the Earth, they bobble up and down in their orbit by as much as 80 to 100 feet. And this bobbling is caused by the force of gravity being less over certain areas and more over other areas. And that's how they determine the mass concentration underneath and some other factors they use to determine the actual depression where there's not enough mass on the surface. But now that if you want to see the whole planet, you click on the text underneath that Earth's gravitational geoid animated, you click on the text, and that will bring up the entire planet as a rotational image. And you can't stop it, but you can certainly see the whole planet as it's misshapen, exaggerated. Now, please don't think that the Earth looks like that russet potato on rotation, but it's just to show you in exaggeration the unequal distance from the surface to the core of the planet in various places on the Earth. I know week before last you guys were interested in Atlantis, and certainly I'm preparing a paper I'm going to present in July, Lord willing, at the conference up in Colorado Springs with Prophecy Watchers. And from last week and the week before that, I started researching these odd little stone formations in Saudi Arabia. And the weird thing is that these formations are in one kind of discrete area with a couple of occurrences away from this main area, this main population of them. And if you click on the, let's see, you go down 5th row down, last picture on the right, it shows a picture of Saudi Arabia and part of the Red Sea with a bunch of little yellow pins. If you click on that, you'll see the big picture, which I took off of Google Earth, and you'll see three yellow pins, it looks like. But there's a lot of yellow pins under the top right one. If you get in closer, you will see that there are many, many pins. And these pins are ones that I've placed over those keyhole-type stone formations that were made somewhere between 6,000 and 9,000 years ago, according to, you know, the archaeologists. Sorry, between 2,000 and 9,000. They've got a big, big window there. who made them or why they made them, but I found communities of stone buildings that were more, you know, like rectangular things that were buried in the sands up to the lintels and stuff. You could see them in the Google Earth photos, and so I started saying, well, here's a settlement, there's a settlement, and here are all these strange little keyhole-type stone structures that are originally about 4 feet tall. So then I started looking around and thought, well, okay, this is this community of these people that nobody knows who they were in Saudi Arabia. Did anybody else build something like that? Surprise, surprise. In the fourth row, middle picture, we have a architectural rendering of Stonehenge, the way it was originally. Temple in the middle, the high stones, ring on the outside which guards the main island, other concentric rings, moats around it, and even a channel with red arrows showing going right out to sea. Stonehenge was built on a model of what Solon passed to Plato about what the capital island of Atlantis looked like. And if you look to the left of that picture, you'll see Atlantis' capital with channels and docks, a painting made from, you know, the Timaeus treatment of how Atlantis looked. You'll see very much that there is a channel running into the concentric rings to the center where the high part is, and that channel goes back out to sea. Now, if you stand over the top of it, like that rendering of Stonehenge, you'll see that it's a raised area in the middle, a big circle, and some little circles in between sometimes, and a channel, like an arm coming right through to that, but not entering the center, you know, where the blue area of the Stonehenge is. If you look at that, and then you go down to the fifth row, let's say, first image, which says, what does it say? It says, strange ancient stone formations in West Saudi Arabia. Now, I had that up a couple weeks ago. Look at it and see the wedge-shaped structure, linear, you know, long structure, going into a ring with a high hill in the middle. It's as though you were standing over the top of Atlantis without seeing all the rings, just the main one around the center island and the channel coming through. But what is interesting in that first photo I have there is you will see little cross members from side to side of that long channel dividing it up as though they were docks, just like it says in the model for Atlantis. There are docks. You can see them in the drawn picture there that they drew from Plato's writing. And I think what happened was that there were survivors from Atlantis. It didn't get everybody, but certainly got the capital and sank it. And it was a geological structure of something happening, you know, a disaster. So the survivors left, and as a symbol of remembrance of Atlantis, they made those stone formations, which had the circle in the middle, the raised island, and the channel arm coming out. Now, you know, that makes sense. But then you say, why did they go all the way from the Mediterranean or something, you know, Santorini up in the, you know, the Aegean Sea? Why did they go all the way from there down into Saudi Arabia to make their colony? I don't think they did. I do not think that Atlantis was in the Mediterranean or in the Aegean anywhere. Primary reason is there's not enough room to have the flat plain they were talking about that was 330 miles long by 110 miles wide. That's a big rectangle. You get on Google Earth or some flat map and you make a little rectangle of that dimension on relative scale, obviously, and move it around in the Mediterranean. There's no place there that you could have had the Great Plain and the city of Atlantis outside of that. Can't do it. Can you do it anywhere else? Well, if you look at the second row and middle picture, which says Atlantis Plain with North Pole where it was in 4000 B.C. Now, this is important. The Earth is tilted 23.5 degrees off of where it should be originally. And that was from a large meteor impact, we think, in the Chicxulub or maybe in the Indian Ocean, one of the two. But something knocked it off tilt. And in this image I've got there, you will see the yellow lines are relative to the North Pole as it was in 4000 B.C., 6,000 years ago. If you look at the red, that's the North Pole as it is today and where it is. So when Plato and Solon, when they talk about east of or north of for various things about Atlantis. It's the same issue I had when I was telling people about the land of Nod being east of the Garden of Eden, which is in Africa on the northeast side. And if you put the world back together again and straighten it up, put the continents back together again and straighten it up, you'll see that there's the west coast of India. There's a little foot and a hook there. You can see it in the, just for a second, go to the next picture over Garden of Eden with North Pole at 4000 BC. If you go there, you'll see I've got Eden and the garden in white, you know, the text, pointing an arrow over to Tanzania and a bunch of little pins, which is where the Garden of Eden was, and an arrow pointing over toward the middle of the west coast of India after it, you know, before it split and formed the Himalayas. You'll see there that the Earth had to be reconstructed and the continents put together and the poles straightened up for that area to be east of Eden. Now, going back to the middle drawing there where I've got Atlantis plain with North Pole, when you look at this picture, this image I've drawn on you know, Google Earth and with Photoshop, you'll see that the North Pole, the yellow line coming up, goes up. I've got two forms of it. I've got one North Pole line coming up through the Red Sea and another one coming up through the tip of the Persian Gulf. Now, the reason I've done that is to compare two places that are strong candidates for where Atlantis was. Now, originally, the size of the plain that you're talking about, that plain area, was not purely a rectangle. It was oblong, it says. And so it could have had some kind of, you know, odd shape to it. It wasn't perfectly rectangular. But there was a moat drilled or dug around it, all the way around that plain. And I don't think we could be able to find that moat today because it would long ago have been filled in with mud and stuff. But the yellow rectangle I've got in the Persian Gulf is 330 miles by 110 miles. Now, the red rectangle is that same rectangle if the Earth stretched, if it's now a third bigger than it was, as Pangaea split and everything, as the flood happened and the impact of the meteor shoved India up to form the Himalayas, as that catastrophic event happened and split the continents, it stretched the surface. Now, there was a certain amount of stretch. It wasn't uniformly 33%. In the Persian Gulf, because that area did stretch a little bit less than it did in other places where the shockwave of the impact made catastrophic separation of the mantle pieces. But anyway, somewhere between the yellow rectangle and the red rectangle is about the size that the plain of Atlantis would be today if you were looking for it, you know, the flat P-L-A-I-N, the plain of Atlantis. So using the maximum size red rectangle, I've placed one in the Persian Gulf and one in the Red Sea, in the middle of it. Now, strangely enough, the one in the Red Sea, the Gulf of Eilat, that rectangle, the top right-hand corner of it, is very close to where the community of the keyhole stone structure builders formed. So if Atlantis was over here, these guys would have made sure and gone in to find habitable type territory there in western Saudi Arabia, made their colony, and migrated some of them up into as far as the Glen Heights. Now, why do I say that? Because on that that enlarged map that I did of the fifth row down the right-hand side where it says download to KMZ for the keyholes on Google Earth, if you look at that, I found a stone keyhole way up there just east of the Golan Heights in Syria. So some people from the Atlantean symbol migrated there, and in the wetlands they put a stone keyhole there and some round structures with a raised hill in the middle. So that's why I say they went other places. But then I started looking other places in the Golan Heights. And the Golan Heights, and kind of south of there, is where the Rephaim, the giants, lived in the tribe of Og. And there is a strange formation that they've preserved. It's called the Gilgal Stones. And, you know, this is south of the Glen Heights just a bit, but that's where the giants used to live before the volcanoes erupted and put magma all over the area in area here is concentric stones. It's four circles. And if you look to the left, there is a pathway, like a channel cut from the outside ring to the inside ring. Why would they make a structure like that that looks exactly like the legendary Atlantis? Now, if you go back out to the main show images page, you'll see in the third row, middle picture, stone rings, the Navajo rock art. If you click on that, you see concentric rings, and you see a channel cut through the outer ones all the way up to the last ring, which was the metallic ring covered in orichalcum that Plato reported was around the center island, you know, where they worshiped Poseidon and stuff like that. You didn't have a channel port going into that. That was sealed off from the public. So very strangely, in the Navajo rock painting, they show this. In Chaco Canyon, they show the same thing. That's in the next drawing over. You can see the same group of circles, and you can see from the upper left going down into the core of that concentric circle, you can see what would be the channel. So all these are other cultures, long way away in our terms, you know, after the continents have drifted apart, long way away from the Middle East where Atlantis would have been. But yet, before everything split apart in the catastrophic thing that caused the flood, there was obviously, you could walk from North America to Europe and stuff like that. They were all connected before Pangaea split. So you can see that these things are in the older cultures and persevere in their rock art and stuff, and some hieroglyphics as well in Egypt, which is, of course, where Solon got his report from the priest at Sais, S-A-I-S, in Egypt near the Delta there, reporting what they knew about Atlantis, that culture in the area.
Stan, if you take it a step further, taking an aerial view of the Vatican City, it is shaped like a keyhole. And there is a channel that goes out to the river Tiber.
Gee, I hadn't seen that.
I remember seeing the Vatican image, an aerial image a while back, and you mentioned the word keyhole, and I just prompted to look up on the Google images the satellite image of Vatican. Not only is there a keyhole with the, well, what's raised in the middle is an obelisk. It's broken up into the inside of the circle of the Vatican. There are different channels, but there's an opening from that keyhole, and the road goes right out to the river Tiber. And interestingly enough, just north of where that channel ends in that river, it looks like a star-shaped or an unfinished pentagram, I don't know what you'd call it, five-pointed star that also is on the north of that channel. It's just very, just reminded me of those Saudi Arabian holes in the ground that you were showing on your show images page.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've looked at two possible places for the island of Atlantis in the Persian Gulf, and I'm looking over in the Red Sea, in the Gulf of Eilat. As well, there are three places I'm looking at for possible locations. Now, the Red Sea one seems to be more probable, but if you look at the second row first image, which says Red Sea bathymetry, that's just, you know, how it looks underneath the water, the hills and valleys. If you look underneath that, you can see that there's a dark blue split right down the middle of it, which is where the mantle separated, split, you know, horrifically. And, you know, that's a very deep chasm that formed. But, you know, if you subtract that from the width of the Red Sea and shove the lighter blue areas together so that they cover up that dark blue gap, that tells you approximately what it was like before the Pangaea split, you know, where the Earth expanded. So somewhere in there, in the lighter blue areas, I think, more than the dark blue, there might be clues to where Atlantis, the city, was. One of the clues says that the plane, the 330 by 110 mile plane, that the southern end of it, and this orientation I'm showing here is the way it was in 4000 BC, the southern end of that rectangular or kind of oblong rectangular shape. The trough, the moat that they dug around it, emptied in the southern corner, or southern side, it emptied into the sea. And if you had a long rectangle in the Red Sea like this, certainly the southern end of it would empty straight into the Gulf of Aden, the port of Aden in that area down there, and straight into the what's now the Indian Ocean. So that would fit. If you look at the same kind of situation over on second row, second picture of Atlantis being in the Persian Gulf, the southern corner, the right-hand corner of the red or the yellow rectangular area for the plane could empty into the Indian Ocean or the Arabian Sea at that point. So it wouldn't be directly north-south, though. And, you know, it would be more like the south-southeast corner. So that doesn't quite line up like I wanted to, but it is still possible that was kind of a general approximation that they were using on the information that the priests of Egypt had to give to Solon. Over on the Red Sea side, the other thing that is of interest is that it was surrounded, the plain was surrounded by mountains. Compare a location of the plain over in the Red Sea to that of being over in the Persian Gulf. And on one side, and the bottom, you know, the long and short side on the left side, there's just flat desert sand. There are mountains over in the, Iranian hillside there, but not all the way around it. If you go over to the Red Sea, however, a rectangle there could very well be said to be surrounded by mountains from up at the Sinai Peninsula all the way down to the Afar Triangle down at Aden. The whole area of the Red Sea is surrounded by mountains, which is a perfect fit to the description of the plain. And also the building of the castles, you know, the throne palace and all that stuff in the center island were done with three colors of stone: black stone, yellow stone, and white stone. And if you look very carefully at that red rectangle in the Red Sea, on the coast you will see sand, which is where you know it comes from, sandstone being eroded. You will see black stuff, which is black lava rock. And if you get very close on Google Earth, you'll see how black it is. It's amazing. And, of course, to the top end of that, you have the red, yellowish-red sand of the desert there in Saudi Arabia. So you would have a yellowish stone, which could be either sandstone or limestone. So those three colors of stone were used in the building of the temple. What they did say was that they had excavated that stone from around the base of the hill, the diapir structure that the castle was built on, and that after so many years of excavating the stone and building moat walls and that kind of stuff around the islands, that it had weakened this. And so when they had the great geological shake that destroyed Atlantis, it crumbled. The weight of the top rock and the castle and everything could not be supported any longer because they had excavated so much and mined so much from underneath it to build other structures that it weakened it and it collapsed. I'm leaning very, very strongly toward Atlantis being in the Persian Gulf, Red Sea, in the Gulf of Eilat. I did find about midway up, let's see, what would that be? About halfway up the image I've got there that I've made of the Red Sea, halfway up in the dark blue area, there's a very deep dark blue circular structure. Was that what used to be the city of Atlantis that collapsed? If it is, it means that since the city of Atlantis was not in the plain, that the rectangular plain had to either be below that or above that. And certainly, if you look at the northern, in this particular perspective, the northern side of the Red Sea, you'll see a very flat planar area up there that goes up to Mount Sinai. And that could very well be where the plain of Atlantis was, while the city of it was lower down, you know, in that deep blue trough somewhere underneath there. Are you starting to buy my story yet?
Well, it's very compelling, very interesting. And you're definitely onto something, Stan.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more research left to do. I am finding small traces of a depression that could have gone around an odd-shaped oblong thing in the northern part of the Red Sea, in this old north, in current vernacular, it would be up toward the Sinai Peninsula. But you look at the mud maps, and there are more detailed ones than this, looking for small, very narrow, thin lines that have been covered over with soot, or sediment, rather, that would have formed around the plain in that area. And there are signs of this just underneath the tip of the Sinai Peninsula and over to the left down the coast of Egypt there, or, you know, whatever country that is. It might be Sudan by that time, I'm not sure. But anyway, you can see small traces of what have been part of that moat. And it does run down a ways down the coast before it disappears. Anyway, I'm having a good time with all this, guys.
You know, Stan, what would be the implications, the implications that would be contrary to common belief, assuming, and I would assume that your findings are correct on this. So, I mean, would there? I mean, I guess I don't know how else to ask that question except to say, you know, what would this imply, or what would the implications be?
Well, first of all, it's going to go against any location for Atlantis being in the Atlantic. There are just a number of factors. You know, the mountains, the rectangular plain, the Pillars of Hercules. Okay, they think that's the rocks that overhang or are on the sides of the Passage of Gibraltar there in the Mediterranean. That might still be true, but the things that are going to have to change are the things that conform to what the evidence is in the Plato document. That is, if you accept the Plato documents being truthful, and I do. One of the things that I discovered in this was that, or came to the conclusion in studying this, was this. Adam and Eve came first, and they had multiple children who interbred with each other. The rule against incest was not passed by God until the time of Moses. So they could interbreed. That was not a problem. They were interbreeding and forming communities coming out of Tanzania, down the Great East African Rift, and into Saudi Arabia. Okay. After the Garden of Eden, the 12 sons of God that, according to the Plato document, came down to Earth and found women attractive here, and Cleito was one of them, and mated with them and started making hybrids between the fallen ones, in essence, and the Adamic man, then produced a lot of the creatures that we see in the archaeological record. So it ties in with the Bible if Atlantis occurred after the Garden of Eden and after a time where they'd had time to make many children, and their children can make many children, etc., because the average lifetime was between, you know, 400 and 900 years. So you can breed a lot. One breeding couple keeps on breeding, and then their children keep on breeding, and rapidly we're populating the earth in that area. But if Atlantis was in the Red Sea area, it is so close, it is walking distance to a far triangle which connects where the great four rivers were that went up to Eden in Tanzania. It all fits, and time-wise, and even in Genesis 6 where it talks about the Nephilim being in the earth in those days, I think those were the fallen ones. And that would have been what Atlantis was.
Gotcha. All right. Now, connecting the dots on this from an investigative perspective, I can see where this would not just confirm biblical and historical accounts, but is consistent with both and vice versa. So, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the general gist of this week. If you go to the fifth row down, picture on the right, which we looked at before, it says download the keyholes on Google Earth. If you click on that yellow print down there, it will download what's called a .kmz file. And that file you can load into Google Earth, and it will show you all of the keyholes that I have found and labeled, and all of the little, I haven't even labeled yet, all of the little communities that were ancient communities in that area. And you can zoom in with your Google Earth and fly over all these areas. I've marked them with pins in there so that you can go and see yourself where these guys all clustered and start studying what you're seeing there and use Google Earth as a digital, you know, archaeologist tool. Get in there and see what you can find in it and deduce from what you're finding in these old villages and stuff with these keyhole things. You know, I see them in one image. I see the keyholes where the channel opens out onto a road, a common road, and you have keyholes on both sides of the road, but the channel side, the rectangular side, is always facing the road where you would travel. You know, it's like Atlantis did that. The end of its channel was going out to the sea where you traveled. So, you know, I'm trying to deduce things from these, and by giving you access to these KMZ files that I've already started building, it allows you to go beyond what I've done and see and deduce why these structures are pointed in a certain direction, why they're clustered together here and not there. Were they lived in? Were they symbols? You know, what were they? They are still a great mystery in the archaeological community. And getting, you know, high-resolution images of it is difficult because, obviously, it's in a country that doesn't allow many of us to wander around with cameras. But anyway, I put that there so that you can join the search and be a digital archaeologist with me.
Fantastic.
Wow, I'm looking at this. Go ahead.
No, it's just it's amazing. And as you're talking, Stan, and describing these circles, as I told you about the Vatican and the keyhole shaped, how that looks from the aerial view, I'm now looking at Washington, D.C., and I'm noticing, you know, we talk about the layout and how the design was definitely done intentionally, and they have a DuPont circle next to Logan Circle.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of that.
And the White House is encapsulated inside a circle, inside of a circle. And I'll have to send you some screen caps of these images, and you can take them from there, because you might really be onto something here with this, because it looks like not only Vatican City but Washington, D.C., both have a layout of circles in the shape of pentagrams or pentagons, as well as both have a pentagon, one the building and one in the form of streets in Rome. So you might very well be onto something.
Like maybe these are the behind-the-scenes people are remembering Atlantis or being ruled by, you know, the returned Atlanteans.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm looking at this. The Jefferson Memorial is like that.
Yeah.
I see that.
And if you take it a step back and look at the White House, and you can see DuPont Circle, Logan Circle, then, you know, branching off the White House, there's a few smaller ones that are right along on these street lines, which are geographically laid out intentionally like this. You know, they say that, you know, Freemasonry would design the city. This definitely will be...
Oh, man, I can't believe...
further investigation.
Joe, we're only a minute out here of the program. I cannot believe how quickly this has gone by. Stan...
And I'm looking at the Vatican. Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry. I'm just looking. I'm looking at aerial photos now, Joe. You are absolutely right. That is a keyhole structure from the air.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And if you go to the right of that, after the Tiber River, if you just see the north, the street lines are in the outline of a star. We've reached the end of the program, though, Stan. We'll have to talk off air and see what we can do to further this investigation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Talk to you next week, Lord willing.
God bless you. That'll do it for us tonight, folks.
Tomorrow, L.A. Marzulli. Have a good night.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.